Hello and welcome into the KE Report. I'm your host, Shad Markowitz, and I'm speaking today with John Rubino, founder of thedollarcollapse.com. And John, it's always great to get you on the show just to get your thoughts on the general markets, Fed policy, and some of the inflation data. And we're going to get into all of it today. But let's kick things off with inflation, because we just saw that hot CPI reading at 7.5%. A lot of people felt, even last summer, that maybe we'd start seeing disinflation, that maybe things would start ratcheting down once some of the supply chain issues worked out, once some of the base effect was gone. But then we saw 6.2%, 6.8%, 7%, and now 7.5%. Clearly, inflation has not started tapering down, and it's actually escalated higher. I mean, what do you make of this? How is it affecting people in their daily lives, and how is it affecting the markets?
Hey, Shad. Well, yeah, in a normal world, a 7.5% inflation year, which is what we had in 2021, would be a crisis. You know, it would have everybody in the government just scrambling for the most extreme kind of shock and awe policy to lean against something that, you know, it's up in the range of where it can run out of control when it's in 7-8%. They would be terrified of that. But to illustrate how far gone we are as a society, the big debate now is whether the Fed's going to raise interest rates a quarter point or a half a point at their next meeting, as if that would do anything to inflation that is, 7 or 8% official and maybe 10 or 12% in reality. To combat that level of inflation historically, you would need a real interest rate of 1 or 2%. In other words, you'd need interest rates 1 or 2% above the inflation rate. And because that's clearly impossible, they're flailing around with these milquetoasty kinds of policy changes that if the current level of inflation has legs, in other words, if it's ongoing, we're going to be completely inadequate in our response to it. And that's going to just make things worse.
Well, John, you were sharing just some interesting tidbits of information, and I was saying I had just gone grocery shopping, and I can't believe a lot of the things I buy are up 30%, 50%. You know, it's amazing to me the things that I was buying a year or two ago, just how insane they are. And a lot of these things are domestic, so it's not a supply chain issue. They're not stuck in the Long Beach port in a big container ship. These are just food items. And you brought up a couple interesting tidbits on that and some vehicles I wouldn't mind having you share with our audience.
Yeah, well, Tyson Foods, the big meat packer in the U.S., raised their beef prices. I forget the exact number, but it was something like 32% or 34% or some crazy number that you would never expect to see in something as basic as beef. And because of that, they reported really good earnings. So their stock went up and everything. You know, it's the kind of thing that you only see in extremely inflationary times when companies have that kind of pricing power, when what they're selling, they can pretty much ask anything for it because people are so desperate to get it, and that makes the prices spike. And you're seeing the same thing in cars right now too, where used car prices are up about 50% in the last 2 years, to the point where a lot of two-year-old vehicles cost about the same as the new version, which is also kind of crazy because cars are the quintessential depreciating asset, right? You drive it off the lot and you're down 40% immediately. And then the declines continue kind of asymptotically towards zero. They never get to zero, but they keep going in that direction. No longer, you know, now you buy a car and you have a reasonable expectation of it going up in value. So these are signs of a market or an economy that is spinning out of control because too much money has been dumped into it. You know, the pandemic lockdowns combined with all the stimmy checks and all the other stimulus that the Federal Reserve did is distorting market pricing in a really dramatic way. So the question now becomes, does this turn into the kind of panic that just sends prices through the roof? In other words, do people who are looking around and seeing what the things they know they're going to have to buy cost, do they go right out and buy like 2 years worth of whatever it is just to make sure they're able to get it? And does that spike prices even further, which causes more panic buying? You know, you really run the risk of a feedback loop that is uncontrollable when you do something like what the Fed has done lately. And so we're kind of there now. You know, that's the kind of thing they're staring at, and they don't have the faintest idea how to deal with it.
Well, John, it's interesting because, yeah, I remember that happening whenever there's a gas crunch or people think that there's going to be a hurricane that hits Texas or the Gulf, that everybody goes out and buys gas to the point where all of a sudden gas prices are racing higher and there is no gas left. We saw it with toilet paper right when the pandemic started. Everybody was selling out of cleaning products. There was no more disinfectants because everybody was panicked because of the COVID situation to the point where you couldn't get cleaning supplies. You couldn't get paper towels. And so if that happens on a larger scale because of inflation where people say, hey, you know, and I've done that in my own life where I've stocked up on batteries, I've stocked up on soap, I've stocked up on certain items just in case they run out. I might as well get a few extra. But if everybody's doing that, there's a point where, yeah, if you're a business like Tyson Meats and you can increase pricing and show good revenue, that's good for those businesses if they have pricing power. But there's some businesses that need those components from other areas to build their products, or there's some businesses that are paying this higher energy cost with oil and gas, and they can't necessarily pass along those pricing to their customers because of the way their business is structured, so it's hitting them in the margins. Could this kind of inflationary activity actually lead to a recession?
Yes, it absolutely can, in part because every product is somebody else's input, basically. So that when the price of one thing goes up, that forces the people who use that thing in their own business to raise their own prices, and you get this kind of runaway effect. But then that prices so many people out of whatever market they're in that you run the risk of demand just collapsing and interest rates spiking because of rising inflation. And that leads to a potentially horrendous recession, or maybe something worse in today's terms. You know, we're so indebted that if we were to see interest rates spike because prices are spiking, that could easily just crash the economy. So you could go from, you know, hyperinflation-ish price action 1 year to a deflationary depression-ish kind of thing 2 years later. And that's just the instability that comes when you screw up your financial system, when you create way too much new currency and you allow too much new credit to come into being and you don't lean against it for too long. And that's where we are now. You know, we're in the kind of situation where the only thing you can predict with any kind of certainty is instability. And that instability can manifest as lots of different things. None of them are good. They're all horribly unpleasant for regular people. And even in this case, potentially dangerous for the super rich, you know, because these guys own a lot of the assets that could crash in this kind of a market. You know, if you've got a big bond portfolio, which the typical multimillionaire does have a big bond portfolio, and interest rates go up, they're liable to see the value of their bond portfolio drop by half, you know, and then that might cause a stock market crash, which takes their stocks down. So, you know, rich people are going to suffer along with everybody else here. Because we don't know enough about what's going to happen to perfectly position ourselves. So almost everybody is at risk right now. And we will have to talk a little bit about gold in our time today, because that's one of the few things that is stable enough to probably protect you from the kind of instability that's coming. But very few other things are like that. You know, very few financial assets are safe right now.
Yeah, as I was sitting here listening to you, you know, the thought comes to anybody's mind is, where do you hide to ride out the storm? Because if interest rates go up, that's probably going to hit the housing market and even the commercial real estate market. If interest rates go up and lending rates go up, then small businesses can't get loans as easy, or they're less likely to take out a loan that's going to have a higher note on it and invest in their business and in growth. So that's going to hit their small business sector. So you start thinking about, well, where can you really go if the markets are in turmoil? So precious metals is one of those safe havens. You brought up bonds, though, and you brought up so many people in the bond market. I wonder, John, are we at this point where with Fed policy, with things being so far behind the curve, with them pulling out their tapering, they were spending $120 billion a month on bonds, and now they're not. As of this month, they're going to be wrapping that up. You know, who's going to buy those bonds, and will there be a great rotation out of bonds and into other assets? Because who wants to sit in a bond that's yielding 2% on a 10-year when inflation's 7.5%?
Yeah, when bonds have a negative real return of 3%, 4%, or 5%, it doesn't make sense to be in them, does it? It used to be with bonds. And when I say it used to be, I'm talking about basically, you know, the adult lifetimes of most people who are around right now, because bonds have been the perfect safe haven asset ever since like 1980, The interest rates have been kind of steadily dropping, which means bond prices have been steadily rising. And in every kind of a crisis, every stock market crash or whatever, money flowed into bonds because they were seen as a safe haven asset. But that was in a disinflationary environment. And that can change dramatically in an inflationary environment when bonds are the worst thing to be in because they get crushed when interest rates go up. And that's kind of what we're seeing now. So, you know, this whole generation of people out there who think they have a lot of their money in quote unquote safe assets, such as bonds and to an extent cash, are finding out that, no, maybe not. You know, they're getting their statements back from their mutual funds and finding out that their bond funds got crushed in the last year. And so it's very hard for almost anybody to figure out how to navigate something like this, because first of all, it's never been this way in the lifetimes of the people who are trying to manage their own money. And it's inherently unpredictable because one thing leads to its opposite very quickly in this kind of instability. You know, a booming economy leads to inflation, which leads to higher interest rates, which leads to the opposite, a crashing economy and plunging interest rates. And you know, and you just can't know when it's going to happen. So we're kind of there now. It could easily be a turn in the next year from raging inflation, soaring interest rates to the opposite, because there's under the surface, there's a lot of stuff going on that point towards a slowing economy, maybe even a recession. For instance, you know, stocks are still historically high, even though they've been choppy lately. But within the NASDAQ, 40-something percent of NASDAQ stocks are 50% or more below their 12-month highs. In other words, the 40% of the NASDAQ is already in a hard bear market. And let that relative handful of stocks that are elevating the NASDAQ turn down. And then you've got an equities bear market, which can lead to a recession. At the same time, you've got consumer spending booming, but because consumers are maxing out a bunch of credit cards, they've run through their stimmy checks, and now they're trying to buy suddenly very expensive necessities of life by putting it on credit cards. Well, you can't do that for very long. So consumer spending is in danger of just zeroing out here pretty soon, you know, not growing at all, or maybe even declining somewhat. And you combine, you know, an equities bear market and a dramatic slowdown in consumer spending, and you get a recession. So we could be going from, you know, raging inflation to its mirror image here in the blink of an eye. And anybody trying to manage money through this is going to have a lot of sleepless nights, because this is such a hard thing to call, both in terms of the magnitude of what happens and of the timing. You just can't know. You know, I saw a headline the other day that even the black box hedge fund strategies now are blowing up, because the computers can't keep up with the market volatility, you know? So humans, computers, it doesn't matter. Nobody can figure out what's going on right now.
Yeah, if the computers can't figure it out, how are you going to make it, John? Well, and it sets up an interesting scenario where you've got this runaway inflation, you've got people maxing out credit cards to keep their consumer buying going because their stimmy checks have run out. But at the same time, even the government can't seem to get its stimulus bills through, and it's going to be even more deadlocked if we have a turning of the tide here in the political spectrum in the United States where maybe nothing gets done, and the Fed is drying up its liquidity. At the same time, many people are worried that the Fed may make a policy mistake here, because all the GDP growth estimates are also for slowing growth, and now is the time they picked to start hiking their rates. And John, I want to ask you about something that we've heard for a long time, is that there was this point coming where people would finally lose confidence in the Fed, and that, you know, they would be boxed in, they'd be painting themselves into a corner where they basically are stuck. And I think that 2022, we may have finally arrived, but people feel like, I've been hearing that for a decade or two, John. Yeah. There's this big thing coming. But I remind people that last year's Davos, Switzerland conference for the global elites was the Great Reset. People are introducing digital currencies in China and saying that at one point we may switch things over to these digital currencies. At the same time, the Fed is doing these big policy changes. We have high energy prices, flattening of the yield curve, all of these things coming together kind of in a tornado or a hurricane of financial things that are setting up for the point where the Fed may not be able to do much. They may not be able to raise rates that much. They could definitely not get them up over 7%. And so at this point, are we going to reach a breaking point that everybody's been waiting for, but people have stopped believing could even come, John? And you had mentioned something offline about your analysis into the long wave cycles of the past versus the printing press. And I think it may sum up this time in history perfectly.
Yeah, this has gone on way longer than it should have been able to, and longer than I thought it was going to last, for sure. And on dollarclaps.com, I have a series which is really due to be updated. It's been a while since I've published a new post along those lines, but it's called The Long Wave Versus the Printing Press. And the thesis is basically that there are a lot of theories out there that deal with long waves, like the Kondratiev wave or the Elliott wave or the fourth turning. And they basically say that human civilization is cyclical and you get long, long, long booms and then long, long busts over and over again. But basically all of them have us in just hell on earth right now, or really long before this. You know, a lot of them, it was basically 2000 when a lot of them peaked, and that should have been the end of that cycle, the credit super cycle that began after World War II. But that wasn't the case. We've still managed to, to keep on creating new credit and generate kind of a simulation of growth, at least. And the reason that we've been able to do that is because the long wave theories, the data that, from which they draw, all took place in sound money environments. In other words, before 1971, when we went off the gold standard globally. So, the big booms and busts that happened back then happened in a sound money environment, which meant you couldn't create insane amounts of credit to extend this thing that shouldn't be extended. But right now we are able to do that. Every major central bank in the world has an unlimited monetary printing press, and that's let them kick the can down the road a lot longer than they should have been able to, or they would have been able to in a sound money world. But, they can't do that forever. And it does look like we're kind of towards the end of the process now, and we might be at the end. So it's possible that for instance, Kondratiev winter, or the fourth turning that we should have seen start in 2000, will be starting pretty soon. And the magnitude of the downturn will probably be much greater than it would have been otherwise, because we've had an extra 20 some years in which to take on even more debt. You know, the numbers right now are just so crazy that it's very possible, if not probable, that the crash and the turmoil that follows the big turn here will be commensurately crazy, because we've just created the conditions for something that really has never been seen in human history. You know, there's never been a time when everybody was inflating away their currencies at the same time. It used to be a country-specific thing in the context of a sound money world. Now everybody's running a fiat currency. Everybody's encouraging the creation of absolutely insane amounts of credit. And so the thing that flows from this is going to be commensurately crazy. And it could be that this is it, or it could be that they come up with some new trick to keep it going for a while. But if there is a trick, I don't know what it would be.
Well, aside from a great reset where we all go to digital currency and they clean the slate on everything and have a big debt jubilee, I don't know what it would be either, John. But let's talk about one area where people may be able to shelter the storm from all of these crazy financial whirlwinds, and that's the precious metals. We've heard forever that the precious metals are a great inflation hedge, but we've seen all this inflation, and precious metals haven't performed as well as many people would have expected under the current circumstances. We also have a sea of geopolitical risks out there, and a lot of times gold and silver would respond to that. So whether it's the Ukraine and Russia situation, whether it's China and Taiwan and that potential powder keg, whether it's the U.S. midterm elections, whether it's truckers in Canada, protesting against the vaccine mandates, there is geopolitical turmoil all over the place. In Europe, it's just crazy. And again, gold and silver aren't really responding to all of these different risk factors, whether it's inflation, whether it's the interest rates, whether it's a cash not working, bonds not working. You would think some of it would start getting a safe haven bid. What's your outlook on the precious metals? And do you think people will start to wake up to their value as a safe haven in their portfolios?
Yeah, well, I think gold and silver are already doing their job, which is to preserve purchasing power. You know, while the dollar is losing 7, 8, 12% or whatever per year of its value, gold and silver are right there, just maintaining their value. And that's what you want them to do long term. You don't buy them for a massive capital gain in the short run. You buy them because 20 or 30 or 50 years from now, the purchasing power you put into them will still be there. You'll still be able to buy the same amount of real stuff with gold and silver that you you could have had you just spent that money right up front. Now, that isn't to say that you won't get that big capital gain out of gold and silver, but the way gold and silver bull markets usually work is they tend to do okay and do okay and do okay. And then when everybody concludes that inflation is here forever and they extrapolate the last couple of years of, you know, financial market instability into the indefinite future and they pile into safe haven assets, that's when gold and silver soar. So there's usually a 1 or 2 year stretch towards the end of a cycle when they go parabolic. That happened in 1979, that happened in 2010, 2011, and it'll probably happen again. And so that means gold will probably, assuming we don't have the big monetary reset where we go back on the gold standard at $10,000 or $15,000 an ounce, assuming it's just market forces here, nothing, you know, no government involvement, you would expect to see gold to go to $5,000 to $10,000 in its final parabolic pop, and for silver to go to, you know, $100 or $200 an ounce. So that's still out there. And it could be much bigger than that because, you know, as I said, the crisis that we're putting ourselves in the way of could be bigger than anything we've seen before. But just, you know, gold doubling from here, silver tripling from here, those two things would be fine, I think, for most stackers. And that's the kind of thing that, you know, it's hard to imagine you not seeing something like that at some point. And we just have to be patient in the meantime and not be shaken out by, say, a 30 or 40% move. You know, that's in the history of precious metals bull markets, that 30 or 40% move was just a prelude to something much bigger and more serious. So the real intellectual challenge here isn't whether to buy gold and silver. Everybody should have some gold and silver. It's how we're going to stay in to be there for that parabolic move, that last year, you know, when all the real money is made, because it's hard to stick around in something that's already up. But history says that with gold and silver, you want to do that until the underlying conditions change. You know, don't bail while things are still getting worse from an inflation standpoint or from an instability standpoint or a geopolitical standpoint. You know, while those things are still out there percolating, expect money to flow into gold and silver and hang in there. And it's when those underlying circumstances change. In other words, when the Fed raises interest rates to double digit levels like they did in the 1970s, or this peace breaks out around the world, or something else, you know, kind of unlikely at the moment, but still possible at some point in the future. When those things happen, then you bail on your safe haven assets. But until then, you know, it's one of those be right and sit tight kinds of things with precious metals. So the real money is made towards the end. But in the meantime, you can rest assured pretty much that purchasing power is being protected with your gold and silver.
We'll wrap it up there, John. That's some good thoughts just to mull over as we close up this particular chat. Always looking forward to our next chat. But if people like some of the thoughts, and especially some of those articles we mentioned, the long way versus the printing press, definitely check out dollarcollapse.com. And John, it's always great having you on the Kate Report, sharing your insights with our audience. So appreciate the chat and looking forward to the next one.
Great, Chad. Thanks.